I'm sure you've heard about it, that this horrific video that was released out of the United States. This is from an incident earlier in the month, around January 7th in Memphis, with a black man who was beaten to death by five police officers. All of the police officers were black. And so, but people are still talking about there being sort of in systemic racism within police services, regardless of the color of the officers themselves. So there are five officers who have been fired, and then possibly charges down the road here. There's a couple more officers who've now been disciplined. Some emergency responders have also been fired in connection with the death. Shortly after we found out that this video was going to be released, you had a number of Canadian police chiefs come out all across the country and condemn that violent beating and saying just how this is not what police work is, and then they completely condemned it. Tried to get out in front of it, certainly, and absolutely what they said was correct. The question is it enough? And is this even a conversation that we should be having about our police forces here north of the border? I don't remember the last time we heard about anyone being beaten to death. There have been incidents about tasers and maybe some police abuse, but actually beaten to death in what looked like a swarming? Certainly not here north of the border.
But is extreme violence the only measure that we have for looking at our police forces here in Canada and saying maybe some reform needs to be made? It's interesting to sort of compare and contrast and look and be thankful that we don't have big stories come through like this here in Canada. But does that mean that we operate a perfect system? I don't think so.
No.
We're going to talk about it right now with the director of the Black Studies Institute at the University of Windsor, Dr. Natalie D'Elia Deckard, is joining the show. Doctor, good morning. Thank you so much for making the time.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for inviting me. Always glad to have a part in the public discourse.
Yeah, I think this is an important conversation to have, but I think this one stems from an interesting point about the fact that I don't know if this video is as widely watched as others that are quite similar to this. There was a big push in Memphis to get this video released, and I'm seeing from a lot of people that they're refusing to watch it because this is an incident that it mirrors others that we've seen in the past. And you don't necessarily need to watch the video to understand the horror that surrounds it. I'm curious, have you watched the video? What was your reaction to it, if you had, or even just this story?
I say this with absolutely no pride and in the spirit of confession. I have watched the video. I think that most people who are saying that they will not are taking the correct position. We should not have to directly witness that type of violence, that type of trauma, to actually know that this is a problem. Right. We don't force the victims of, I could name sexual assault, I could name mass shootings, right, to bleed on camera in order to understand that there's a problem. Right. Always when we talk about police violence against Black people particularly, there's this push to watch it. And I really question that.
I think some people say that, how can you, that it's the guttural reaction that prompts change, that otherwise you could just sort of whitewash. I'm sure it's horrible, but it doesn't stick in your mind. It doesn't sort of become a part of you, which I guess that would be the only argument. I'm not saying one way or the other. I'm just trying to wrap my head around what the argument might be, is that it would then truly make you want to act to do something.
Was the argument that Mamie Till made about the death of her son Emmett Till before the civil rights movement in the United States, and why she published open casket images in then black and white in Jet magazine. And I think that when we understand the complete dehumanization of African Americans in the United States before the civil rights movement, I would never disagree with Mamie Till's decision. We are 70 years past that, and I'm wondering why we're still having that conversation.
Yeah, and it does seem to be one that we've had before. And it's so frustrating, I think, that we're still here, we're still talking about it. Yes, this is something that happened in the States. We're in Canada, where luckily stories like this one aren't something that cut through. But, you know, as we mentioned on the outset, Doc, I don't know that because we don't hear about beating deaths here in Canada, that it doesn't mean that we have a perfect system. Can you sort of walk us down that path and compare and contrast what's happening in the States versus what's happening in Canadian police forces and what needs to change here?
Sure, absolutely. We are not okay. Right? The number of Indigenous people, the number of racialized people, and the number of Black people who have been killed by police in Canada is absolutely not zero. It is much smaller, right, than the United States, as is our population. But we are not in a completely different conversation. The idea that, for example, in the northeastern states of the U.S., this is less of a problem than in the southeast, means that we're on a spectrum, right, of violence against the same marginalized communities. And that is not a spectrum that the Canadians are separate from. I heard a reasonably good quote the other day talking about how the British Commonwealth had its own U.S. South, and that was the Anglophone Caribbean. I think that a good understanding of the way that colonization happened from Patagonia to the Yukon as part of North American and South American conquest by Europeans means that any border that we drew and agreed on, finally in the early 80s, doesn't absolve Canada from its history. And our policing shows that. Here in Windsor, we have similar figures to what we have in most of Canada, where Black people are 350% as likely as their white counterparts to have force used against them by police. That is, just by walking in my body, I am more than three times as likely than if I were white to have force used against me by the police services. That's a stunning statistic and one that we have to confront. In many ways, the police service statements regarding the killing in Memphis is a distancing. Look at what they're doing in the U.S. You should be grateful that we're not doing this here. We condemn what they are doing there. And make ourselves, in contrast, right, seem better. I would really question that as a member of the tax-paying Canadian public. It's just not good enough.
Yeah, it's fascinating insight into that point of view. I'm curious, often, and I've seen it already over the last few days, people say, well, those were five Black police officers who ended up swarming on a Black man. That racism, obviously, since they were Black police officers, didn't enter into it. The question, though, that people have raised is that it becomes systemic within the system, mm-hmm. and so because they were officers, that was something that perhaps allowed them or drove them or gave them some thought that there was permission to do so. That their race had nothing to do with it. The systemic racism within the police force in that area is what did it.
I would absolutely agree with the second point. The idea that because these were Black officers, this isn't about racism, is patently ridiculous. Organizational culture is a real thing. There are whole departments in business schools that study the ways that different organizations, different agencies, take on a character of their own. When we talk about the history and presence of policing in Canada, in the Americas, we're talking about an institution, right, that's built on who protects from who. What are the agencies that are in charge of making sure that that particular power systems endure? Right? The idea that because these individual police officers were Black, right, they're not being racist, right, when they beat a Black man to death, is, to my mind, completely ignorant of history and completely ignorant of the way that organizations work. Rather, they would have had the biggest incentive to enact that violence in order to prove themselves a part of the organization. And that's not even particular to policing. That's the way that organizations work. Those closest to the boundaries of the organization, right, try their best to center themselves. We see it again and again.
It's such a great point to make, and I think when you take a step back and you look at some of the training for these officers, I mean, target practice, for example, is it takes place on caricatures of African American people. It's right from the, I think, beginning of their inception into the police force, that sort of systemic racism. And it's interesting the point that you make about trying to fit in and be part of this group and sort of be accepted within a system. I think major reform is the only way forward. Would you agree?
Absolutely. How can we reconceive of police forces in Canada so that everyone has to be protected equally, and that, right, everyone, right, can be understood as a potential threat, right, to the peace of all communities? I think without structural change from the level of leadership, I know from the existing literature, from the research, from what's been done in criminology, right, that without that leadership change, without that structural reform, we're just going to be watching or not watching these videos over years to come.
And even if we haven't had an incident like that in Canada to that level and with that kind of video backing it up, et cetera, doesn't mean we couldn't end up going down that road. So now is the time to ensure that we don't get to that extreme. I know you've already mentioned that there are issues and we have some issues. You don't want to go farther down that road. So is this a good wake-up call then? And what do you think immediate change might look like, if at all?
I ask myself this not only as a public servant, not only as a professor, not only as a person, right? How can I consistently be part of an incremental solution rather than part of an incremental problem? I know that shrugging it off and saying, oh, well, it's worse there, so I guess we're fine, is being part of an incremental problem. And that's not a moral position. That's not an ethical position. I think that it's extraordinarily important that we understand we live in a democracy, and we consistently demand that all of our public institutions, and especially our police, that so often have power over life and death, are accountable to all of us in the community.
Doctor, thank you
so
much.
That's a step forward.
Thank you so much for making the time. Great perspective. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Again, right, it's extremely important to remain part of an active public discourse. So thank you for the opportunity.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.